Southwest Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Obama backs Iran nuclear deal as smart, responsible diplomacy. President Obama Tuesday sought support for an international nuclear agreement with Iran, insisting it's a smarter, more responsible way to protect U.S. national security. His remarks to a veterans group Tuesday followed Monday's unanimous endorsement of the deal by the 15-member U.N. Security Council. The president also demanded that Iran release three Americans it's holding and help find a fourth believed to be in the country. Some family members, friends, and associates of the four have criticized Mr. Obama for not winning the release of the captives as part of last week's international agreement with Tehran. The U.S. Congress has 60 days to accept or reject the nuclear agreement aimed at restricting Iran's nuclear program in exchange for lifting of sanctions. In Burundi, results of Tuesday's presidential election are expected by Thursday. The vote went off despite violence that left at least two persons, including a police officer, dead and amid an opposition boycott. Months of unrest was sparked by President Pierre Nkurunziza's controversial bid to win a third term. Turnout was reported low in some areas of the country. Critics say Mr. Nkurunziza should not be allowed to serve a third term, but Burundi's constitutional court ruled he's eligible because he was chosen by lawmakers rather than voters for the first term in 2005. The U.S. State Department says by going ahead with the election Tuesday, Burundi's government could lose legitimacy in the eyes of its people. This is VOA News. In Iraq, at least 14 people were killed, dozens wounded Tuesday following two car bombings in mostly Shia neighborhoods of Baghdad. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but the Islamic State group has been trying to destabilize the Shia-led Iraqi government. A ship carrying food aid for the people of Yemen port city of Aden docked on Tuesday, where months of fighting has created a humanitarian crisis. Meanwhile, in Geneva, a UN spokesman said nearly 1,700 people have been killed since a Saudi-led air coalition campaign began hitting Shia Houthi rebel targets in Yemen. The UN estimates some 13 million people in Yemen are thought to be in dire need of food assistance. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta Tuesday said the fight against extremism will be the main topic of discussion when President Obama visits the East African country beginning late Friday. Kenya's state security agencies have been receiving training from the United States, Britain, and Israel to combat Islamist fighters from the Somali-based Al-Shabaab group. Kenya has suffered a number of attacks in the past 2 years, including one in a northern university in April, in which nearly 150 people were killed. Algeria's prime minister on Tuesday vowed to respond strongly following the killings of at least 9 soldiers in an ambush last week that was claimed by Al-Qaeda's North African branch. Prime Minister Abdel Malik Salal said on a visit to Spain, there will be a relentless pursuit of these terrorists. South Korea's Yonhap News Agency says North Korea appears to be preparing to launch a new long-range rocket perhaps later this year. Quoting an anonymous South Korean government official, it says the North has completed upgrades at a launching facility near the Chinese border. The upgrades include installation of a 67-meter-tall launch tower capable of handling a rocket twice the size of North Korea's Onha 3 rocket, which put a satellite into orbit in December of 2012. The North is banned under UN Security Council resolutions from conducting tests that use ballistic missile technology. And U.S. professional baseball's Baltimore Orioles team has signed 19-year-old Chinese infielder Guiyuan Xu, the first such signing since Major League Baseball opened developmental centers on the Chinese mainland in 2009. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, July 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's president vows to recover money stolen from government coffers.
The most important thing for us is to try and get those documents so that final prosecution will be possible. Because we don't want this serious recovery of stolen money to be reduced to token assignment.
That's President Muhammadu Buhari speaking Tuesday in an exclusive VOA interview. The UN says Nigerian refugees in Cameroon are moving away from the country's volatile border. President Obama will highlight the importance of U.S. investment during his trip to Africa this week. And Burundi's government reacts to those who criticize Tuesday's controversial presidential election.
In some other countries of the world, people are complaining, saying that the governments are not organizing elections on time. But here in Burundi, the government took the responsibility to organize elections. So I think we should be congratulated, not condemned.
Wole Nyamitwe is the senior advisor on media and communication to President Pierre Nkurunziza. We'll also find out how the vote went yesterday, and the latest round of South Sudan peace talks is due to start soon. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says a regional joint task force to fight the militant group Boko Haram will be up and running by the end of this month. Mr. Buhari, who hails from northern Nigeria, where Boko Haram is most active, said there has been progress in the fight, but he refused to predict imminent victory. The Nigerian leader is in the middle of a four-day visit to Washington. In this exclusive interview with VOA's Peter Clarté, Mr. Buhari vows to recover money stolen from government coffers. He says he has been assured by President Barack Obama of U.S. cooperation.
Well, I'm grateful that President Obama invited me, and since we met at G7 in Germany last month, while he extended the invitation, I came, and as we can produce the necessary documents that will give the legal backing to the recovery, once it's traced to the United States government will cooperate. I don't think I can get a better assurance than that.
Mr. President, when you came into office, you said the coffers of the Nigerian kitty was empty. How do you intend to recoup monies siphoned out of the country? Because reports say about $150 billion have been siphoned out of the country within the last 10 years.
Well, it's not busy. We have to trace it and get the documents. Both for shipping of the illegal crude at its destinations, which accounts the payments were credited, and then identify the people responsible, both in the system, the Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation, and those that ordered it, the technocrats and the politicians that are responsible for this diversion. So the most important thing for us is to try and get those documents so that final prosecution will be possible. Because we don't want this serious recovery of stolen money to be reduced to token assignment. We have to get the documents, we have to identify the persons, and we then start the process of prosecution.
You promised during your campaign that you're going to stamp out corruption. People say that corruption is endemic in the structures of the government. How do you plan to weed that out?
Well, it's a very well-known case that there is no Ministry of Affairs statute in Nigeria that you will go without financial and administrative instructions. So for people who refuse to be accountable, they will be held responsible.
Morale of your military folks were a little down before you took power. You changed strategy, moving some folks to the north to fight the insurgency. How sure are you that your plan will succeed, especially when Boko Haram has stepped at attacks with suicide bombings now?
We have changed the commanders. New set of troops have been trained, and the joint multinational joint task force, comprising of troops from Chad, Niger, Nigeria, Benin Republic, would be deployed in the theater of operation. So really, this is the practical and the realistic way the problem can be faced.
That's Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari speaking in an exclusive interview with viewers Peter Clotty. The United Nations Refugee Agency says increasing numbers of Nigerian refugees in Cameroon are moving away from the volatile border area to a United Nations camp in a more secure region inland. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
Nigeria's presidential election in March has done nothing to stop Boko Haram's destructive behavior. People continue to flee from violence in the country's northeast. Refugees who previously have fled to Cameroon to escape the violence in Nigeria are feeling increasingly threatened by cross-border attacks from the militant group. The UN Refugee Agency says Nigerian refugees who are camped along the border in Cameroon's remote far north region are seeking shelter at a refugee camp some 100 kilometers away. It says about 100 people each day are arriving and being registered at Minowao Camp, which is run by the UNHCR and partners. Agency spokesman Leo Dobbs says the camp population has risen from about 30,000 late last year to around 44,000 today. He says most of the new camp arrivals had earlier fled from Borno State to escape militant Boko Haram attacks. He says until now, the refugees have stayed close to the border, hoping they could return home quickly.
Now, we and the government have been encouraging people to move further south to safer areas, where to Minowao, where they can be helped and where they're safer. The volatility of the border was borne out earlier this month when there was been a series of attacks and clashes, including a suicide bombing on July the 12th, the first such attack in Cameroon. It took place in the northern town of Fotokol.
The UNHCR has limited access in the far north region because of security concerns. Nevertheless, it estimates some 12,000 unregistered refugees are living along the border. The Cameroonian authorities believe that number may be as high as 17,000. Dobbs says the government has begun registering Nigerian refugees in the area. He tells VOA the registration process is provoking fear among some refugees that they might be returned to Nigeria against their will.
There's always a fear that of people being forced back. And we have in the past urged the authorities in Niger and Cameroon to keep the doors open to refugees and to not to send people back against their will.
In a separate development, the UNHCR says some 2,500 Nigerian refugees reportedly have arrived in the Difa region of southern Niger in the past few days. This follows an attack by Boko Haram militants on the Nigerian town of Damasak early last week. It says most of the new arrivals are women, children, and the elderly. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
President Pierre Nkurunziza's government is congratulating Burundians for participating in what a spokesman called peaceful, free, and fair election despite opposition boycott and a widespread pre-election violence. The U.S. State Department said Tuesday the Burundian government risked legitimacy by its refusal to delay the vote. But Willy Nyamitwe, senior advisor on media and communication to President Nkurunziza, says the Burundian government should be congratulated for holding the elections, not condemned.
First of all, the government of Burundi thanks all the Burundians because the elections went in a peaceful way, and Burundians have been many gathered in polling centers to vote. So we can say that these elections went in a peaceful and free and fair way.
An opposition person was killed along, I think, with a Burundian police officer. Who is responsible for that?
Yes, in some small suburbs of Bujumbura, before the elections, there are some people who are shooting just to intimidate people not to go to vote. Because, as you know, there are some opposition leaders who called Burundians not to go to vote. So since people do want to go to vote, some others are just shooting to intimidate them. So who is responsible? Everybody knows it's leaders of the opposition and some civil society activists who called the Burundians to refuse anything that can come from the government.
The United States has said that your government's dismissal of calls to delay the election risks legitimacy.
You should know that elections belong to Burundians. You cannot say that the government that is responsible of organizing elections can postpone elections beyond the constitutional limits. So we have some red lines that we cannot cross. They have to understand that in some other countries of the world, people are complaining, saying that the governments are not organizing elections on time. But here in Burundi, the government took the responsibility to organize elections. So I think we should be congratulated, not condemned.
Did your government deny an African Union delegation permission to, I think, observe or come to the country?
I think this is coming from people who don't know the reality. Remember, the president of Burundi has called the international community and all the partners to send their observers before, during, and after election. Concerning this issue of observers from the African Union, the government of Burundi gave them some small conditions to getting a visa. As it is, they have to get a visa. When themselves fail to drop their files to the embassy of Burundi to seek these visas, they cannot come because they delay themselves and condemn the government of Burundi. So they have to blame themselves, not the government of Burundi.
Willy Nyamitwe is the senior advisor on media and communication to Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. Today's Wednesday, July 22nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. Burundians are expecting results from Tuesday's controversial presidential election, possibly by tomorrow, Thursday. Incumbent Pierre Nkurunziza is certain to win after opposition groups boycotted the poll, arguing that the president is not eligible to serve a third term. Mohamed Yusuf has more from the capital, Bujumbura.
Burundi's Electoral Commission forecasts that three-fourths of eligible voters will cast ballots on Tuesday, but the actual number likely to be much lower. Turnout was light in Bujumbura, held down by opposition boycott of the poll and the fact that more than 170,000 Burundians have fled the country to escape the violent protest against the president. The capital was placed more on edge by gunfire overnight that killed at least two people. One election official told VOA there was also gunfire Tuesday around a polling station. We opened the station at 6 in the morning and people are coming in small numbers. At around 9, we heard gunfire and that has made the turnout to be low. VOA saw one man who did vote trying to remove the indelible ink from his hands for fear of reprisals. There are those who don't want us to vote. They will cut my finger, he said. There are after those who have gone to vote. Some shared optimism, like Faraha Jocelyn. I came out to vote because there is security in the polling station and in the streets. And coming here today makes me feel safe, she said. For others, however, the vote will not change anything. Our only hope is God, this man said. Since I came to vote, but I don't see how my vote is going to help me. We just came to vote. Because of the opposition boycott, President Nkurunziza is guaranteed to win the election. That prospect has led to fears of diplomatic isolation for the Central African country and further unrest internally. One former presidential candidate, Agathon Rwasa, says the future of his country looks bleak.
Even if he could be elected 100% by all the Burundians. So I think we are heading to isolation. And the consequences of the isolation are very, very bad.
The National Election Commission says it is uncertain when the result on Tuesday's vote will be announced. Mohamed Yusuf of UN News, Bujumbura.
President Barack Obama will highlight the importance of boosting U.S. investment in Africa during his trip to Kenya and speech at the Global Entrepreneurship Summit. U.S. officials say nearly half of all jobs created in Africa are from small businesses, many of them owned by women. VOA White House correspondent Aru Pandey talks to a Rwandan handicraft exporter who has transformed the lives of thousands of women with the help of the United States.
The Rwandan genocide decimated families and left many women to fend for themselves. But Janet Nakubana and her sister devised a way to help Rwandan women become self-reliant. They sell their hand-woven baskets overseas to large U.S. retailers like Macy's through our handicraft export company, Kahaya Links.
We have actually empowered over 3,000 women in Rwandan communities. These women are no longer on the street begging. They can buy their health insurance. They can pay tuition for their children.
Nakubana credits the 2000 African Growth and Opportunity Act for opening U.S. markets to African entrepreneurs like her, and the government-funded U.S. Africa Development Foundation for giving her a grant and the training needed to get her business off the ground a decade ago. USADF Chairman Jack Leslie says the foundation's mission is to work with the underserved in Africa, where small business creates about 50% of the jobs on the continent.
Africa, to give you a sense, only gets about 3% of foreign direct investment. So helping these engines of growth and these enterprises that are really creating jobs is incredibly important, and they're good investments.
Leslie says President Obama's visit to Kenya and speech at the Global Entrepreneurship Summit will bring the world's attention to a new wave of economic activity in Africa.
There's talk of the Silicon Savannah in East Africa, which is really showing amazing leaps in mobile technology. I mean, in many ways, the Kenyans are way ahead of us in the United States on mobile banking, for example.
But it's not just boosting small African entrepreneurs. USADF is also pairing with large American companies like GE to help give more Africans access to electricity. GE Africa CEO Jay Ireland says Africa offers tremendous potential for investment, but adequate infrastructure is key to economic growth.
They're going to be absolutely critical to have power. And they need that to attract manufacturing. They need that to, whether it's mines or oil rigs or shopping centers or whatever, they need electricity. So you're looking at a significant deficit of across the range of countries.
GE, USADF, and others are supporting small businesses to come up with off-grid energy solutions. For Janet Nakubana, investing in entrepreneurs, particularly women, is key to the economic empowerment of an entire country.
Empowering us, giving us opportunities, you are giving opportunity to the generation of tomorrow.
Aru Pandey, VOA News, The White House.
South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makuei says his government's negotiating team will leave for Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, later this week to begin work on the latest round of peace talks. Wakil Simon Wudu of VOA South Sudan in Focus program has more from Juba.
Makuei says the government team is slated to leave Thursday for Addis after receiving an invitation from representatives of the IGAD Plus initiative. He says IGAD's new timetable is calling for a final comprehensive peace agreement to be signed by both leaders on August 17. Makuei confirms negotiators from both sides will gather in Addis on Friday when IGAD Plus will present a draft agreement to the two parties.
If the draft agreement meets the expectations of the two parties and the people of South Sudan, then definitely it will be signed.
Makuei warns the government will not be prepared to sign any new language inserted into the draft agreement. Talks between the government and rebels loyal to Riek Machar collapsed in March after President Kiir and Machar failed to meet an IGAD-imposed deadline and sign a permanent agreement. At that time, the rebels demanded that there be two separate armies during the transitional government of national unity. They also wanted South Sudan to adopt a federal system of government, something the Kiir administration opposes. Makuei says it will be unfortunate if these same demands are inserted into the IGAD Plus draft agreement.
The issue of the federal system is a task of the National Constitutional Review Commission. As for the two armies, it is a situation that we are not accepting.
James Okuk is a political science lecturer at the University of Juba and a regular commentator on South Sudan issues. He says considering these recent developments from the two parties, there is little hope they will sign a comprehensive peace agreement this time around.
If you see Dr. Riek Machar on that side, he's already forming his own government. For example, he appointed a new commissioner of oil sector last 2 weeks. and he's appointing more civil administration on his side. So that means he's preparing his own government. The other side here in Juba, the government is preparing to do a reshuffle.
Okok believes the international community should apply more pressure by imposing sanctions on both parties if they fail to sign a final agreement in August. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wodo in Juba.
25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa. Sportsman, here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with basketball. France beat Mali 69-50 as the United States of America overpowered Egypt 104-41 at the Women's World Under-19 Basketball Championships in Chekhov, Russia on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, Mali play Australia as Egypt challenge Russia. In cricket, Netherlands beat Namibia by 4 wickets at the 2016 ICC 2020 World Cup qualifiers in Dublin, Ireland on Tuesday. Turning to football, Tanzania mainland's Azam beat South Sudan's Malakia 2-0, Sudan's El Ahli Shandi and Burundi's LLB drew 2-2 as Rwanda's APR dismissed Somalia's Higen 2-0 at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's SEKAFA Kagame Club Championships in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, Sudan's Khartoum National engage Zanzibar's KMKM, Uganda's Kampala City Council Authority encounter Ethiopia's Adama City as Djibouti's Telecom challenge Tanzania mainland's Young Africans. Meanwhile, African champions Ivory Coast have a new coach in Michel Doucet. The Ivory Coast Football Federation revealed in Abidjan, Ivory Coast. He takes over from fellow Frenchman Hervé Renard, who guided the Elephants to win the Orange Africa Cup of Nations in Equatorial Guinea earlier this year. In athletics, Ethiopian Dejen Gebremeskel won men's 5,000 meters in 13 minutes and 5.38 seconds at the KBC Night of Athletics in Houston, Belgium on Saturday. Morocco's Fouad El Kam, Kenyans Nicholas Bett and Timothy Kitum prevailed in 1500 meters, 3000 meters steeplechase and 800 meters respectively. Kenyan Michael Nyang'au was second in 200 meters as Botswana's Paco Seribe and Sudan's Younes Idris placed third in 300 meters and high jump respectively. Meanwhile, Nigerian Amaka Ogegbunam and Kenyan Beatrice Chepkoech triumphed in women's 400 meter hurdles and 1500 meters respectively as Ethiopian Gotietom Gebreselassie placed second in 5,000 meters. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, July 22nd.
Good morning. This is William Kukula from Morocco, Liberia. I'd like to commend President Buhari for his visit to Washington and subsequent meeting with President Obama. I hope such a historic visit will bring some solutions to the ongoing Boko Haram attack in Nigeria and also strengthen bilateral agreements between Abuja and Washington that will bring economic stability to West Africa. Thank you and have a great day.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says a regional joint task force to fight the militant group Boko Haram will be up and running by the end of this month. That is it for this Wednesday, July 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer James Harmon, I am James Barton in Washington saying have a nice day, Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, U.S. President Barack Obama prepares to travel to Kenya, his father's homeland, for the Global Entrepreneurship Summit and to Ethiopia to meet with African Union officials. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they discuss the significance of his trip to the continent. That's Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
Her lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandit.